You might have noticed that Pat and I are pretty fussy about our finances and our investments.
Yeah, a lot of junk doesn't make it past our bullshit detectors. But one thing that we've both used for many years is ShareSite. It records all dividends, franking credits, transactions, and performance easily in one place.
You can generate reports for income and capital gains, which makes tax time super easy. And ShareSite is completely free if you have 10 holdings or less.
So we've partnered with ShareSite to help support the podcast and provide all our listeners who upgrade to a paid plan a saving of 33% off the annual plan price. If you start with a free plan using our link, you'll still get that discount if you upgrade to a paid plan in the first 60 days.
Just head to ShareSite.com/fire and chill to get started.
Welcome to the Fire and Chill podcast, a collaboration between Dave from Strong Money Australia and Pat from Lifelong Shuffle, where we're going to have regular conversations about fire, investing, and living your best life.
Hey, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of Fire and Chill. If you follow the financial news, or maybe even if you don't, you tend to hear a lot of stories which, on the surface, they sound like big events. You know, you might hear about a company that's up 800% this year, or you might hear about a hedge fund that just lost $20 billion. Maybe one industry is dying, and maybe one other industry is booming. Maybe one cryptocurrency is going to the moon, and then you hear another story saying it's about to collapse. The stories are really endless, and of course, then we also have forecasts of what people think is going to happen in the future, which is it might be the property market or the economy or jobs or buying a house or all the rest of it. So today we just want to take some time and talk about how much of that financial noise actually matters and what we can do to stay focused on our financial goals without all this stuff in the background that's hitting us from all these different directions, how we can actually deal with that and focus on our long-term plans regardless of what's happening around us.
Sounds good, Dave. That was a good intro, good summary. Everything we're going to talk about today. I wish I had something to add.
Well, that's the thing, because all these stories that are hitting us all the time, they make them sound important, right? Instinctively, I guess we think, oh, I should probably listen to that because it sounds like it's going to affect my wealth or it's going to affect my well-being. So we're inclined to pay attention to things like that.
But there's a whole economic effect called the wealth effect, where apparently people spend more because their house is worth more. The value of your house should have zero impact on the amount of money you decide to spend on an everyday basis. Whether your house costs $200,000 and it's fully paid off or you have a loan on it, or it costs $800,000 and it's fully paid off or you have a loan on it. If it goes down by 50%, what has that got to do with your loan repayments? Zero. What has that got to do with your cash flow? Zero. What has that got to do with, like, how soon you retire? Zero.
Yeah, you can see on the surface that wouldn't make sense, but it's a psychological thing and a behavioral thing, and it's something that's been observed to be true over in multiple countries. While we can sit here and say that doesn't make sense, this is what people do. And maybe people would say, yeah, that doesn't really make sense rationally, but in reality, that's what happens.
I mean,
unless you can understand people don't feel as wealthy, so they're not inclined to spend as much. It's probably not even a conscious choice. It's just something that happens subconsciously. They don't feel quite as good if their house has gone down by $100,000 in the last 12 months. So maybe they won't spend as much on a holiday or something like that because they don't feel as good. They might feel like, well, that's related to the economy, and then maybe something will happen with my job, or all these things are kind of interconnected.
I mean, if you're planning on, like, downsizing when you retire, then that will make a difference. Like, you should probably spend less because you're planning on using some of the equity in your home to fund future expenses. That makes perfect sense. But the vast majority of people are planning to, like, just live out their days in their home, or maybe they just swap one home for another. But in either case, if the market goes up or down and you're just swapping homes, that, again, it shouldn't make a huge difference to you as long as you get in and get out at around the same time.
Well, that was our first tangent for the day.
Many more to follow. I find the wealth effect, like you said, it's understandable that people feel less wealthy and so they decide to spend less, and it's probably unconscious. Mm. But for the most people who are just going to live in their homes, it doesn't actually make a lot of sense.
All right, so let's get into some of the kind of recent stories and stuff that has been hitting the headlines, and people would have been slapped across the face with this from every direction. And we're not talking about it because we want to discuss news. If you've been listening to us for a while, you'll know that we're not really, well, we're not at all like a financial news show. We're really just talking about basic principles and strategies and stuff like that. We're not really a week-to-week news and following what's happening. That's not our style.
Yeah.
But we just thought we would cover this because it relates to what we're talking about today.
So you may have heard pretty recently about a company called GameStop. And there would have been a lot of news surrounding a huge like increase in price of GameStop and Wall Street bets and Reddit and bankers and short squeezes and a whole bunch of other financial jargon that maybe you understand, maybe you don't.
Should we just explain a little bit about what actually happened for the people who don't know, just to cover it a little bit?
Yeah, probably.
Not the nuts and bolts, just generally what happened.
Basically, a whole bunch of people on Reddit figured out that a hedge fund was pretty overexposed to a company on the downside, so they were betting that the company would go down in value. And so the Reddit group decided that they would all buy in and push the price up so they could, like, I don't know, give a middle finger to this hedge fund manager. Was that basically it?
That's my understanding of it, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And by doing this, they would force the hedge fund manager to sell at a huge loss. And then they could...
The hedge fund, because the hedge fund had shorted this stock, they have to buy back at a higher price.
Right, yeah.
Because they borrow the stock to sell it, and then they have to... When the aim is when the price goes down, they buy it back and they make a profit.
But it happened the other way around because of this sort of activism
exactly.
From this Reddit group. This was like all over the news for about a month, and everyone in finance had a view on it. People were talking about it. There was... You could argue about the details about whether it was like actually activism or it was like some people in Reddit trying to make money. But that's beside the point of what we're discussing today, which is it's just background noise. Why do we care?
How relevant is all the are all these stories? Is this big episode, which captured everyone's attention for what, 3 weeks or a month, how relevant is it to people like us, Pat, in the financial independence space?
Zero. Like, it's so zero. It's unbelievable, right? This actually reminds me of, I think it was like toward the end of 2018 when the market took like a 10 or 20% dip. Like, this is long in everyone's memory. No one even remembers this event.
I can't remember that now. Oh, rings a bell, actually. Yeah.
At the time, like, people were worried, oh, is this the market downturn or what's going to happen? Just 2 short years later, most people cannot even remember that occurred.
Mm.
And the same will be true of this GameStop thing. Like 2 years' time, we'll be like, what? What happened with GameStop? Oh, yeah, I remember that on the news, something.
This vague memory.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, part of the story is, part of the interest is with people that have taken huge, I guess, speculative bets which have really paid off, and that captures people's attention for obvious reasons. People starting with not much and turning $5,000 into, I don't know, $500,000 or something equally insane. And it's almost distracted a lot of long-term investors and causing them to question whether what they're doing makes sense anymore, because they're thinking, oh, maybe things have changed, maybe I should be doing what these other people are doing over here, because it seems like people are making easy money, essentially. And
yeah,
this creates a bit of FOMO. People don't want to miss out on easy gains. It's hard to watch other people making heaps of money and you just making a moderate amount of money.
It's hard, isn't it? Like when you feel like you're doing the responsible thing and you've got a nice diversified portfolio, and then people are like throwing money into GameStop or Bitcoin or something, and they're like tripling and quadrupling and times 10 their investment. And you're like, oh, why am I doing this? Why don't I just do what they're doing? And then I could also be the same.
And part of it is, I guess, that there's some thinking around certain themes and certain stocks or certain ideas, that these ideas will just continue to grow to the moon like this, and that will just continue forever. And you see this happen, or you're aware of this happening, or you hear stories about this happening like every decade or so. Certain sectors or certain stocks or whatever are just absolutely bulletproof, and you're just printing money by buying certain things.
Last one would have been like the 2008 like residential real estate in the US was considered a pretty safe bet. But then it all went to hell. Yeah, yeah. And then before that, it would have been the tech boom in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I don't even know before that, before my time.
And I guess when we, like, if you think about it, it's pretty awesome that people can and are and have made a whole lot of money putting not much down, and that some of these speculative bets have really paid off. That's pretty cool, turning not much into a lot. But then for the other people, it's causing like a lot of anxiety seeing these other people get rich, and it's causing them to pile in, and usually at the worst time. Like, you have, I think they found that a lot of the trading in GameStop happened after the peak. Like, a lot of the people who are jumping in was like the worst possible time to jump in.
Yeah, yeah. By the time you've heard about it, it's probably too late anyway. So these sort of speculative things.
And you'll often find that with, you probably noticed this too, Pat, but people who do have certain, some of these bets in their portfolio, these speculative positions, they have absolute confidence, like supreme confidence, 100% certainty that this thing is the future. This thing is going to the moon, and they're going to be filthy rich because of it.
Yeah. And often as well, it's like let's say they made a bit of money in the past on it. Like, they think that is like proof or vindication for them choosing that investment strategy in the first place, as though making some money by buying Bitcoin at $10,000 and now it's worth $30,000 or whatever it is, I don't even know, means that was a good buy back then. And so it emboldens their confidence in it.
The funny thing is, I guess, with things like that is it works until it doesn't, right? So it works as more people pile on and as more people add money to the fire, I guess, fuel to the fire, it's self-reinforcing, and it keeps working until people no longer believe in it.
Yep.
And that can last a very, very long time.
Could last forever.
Mm.
I was saying before, there's no reason why speculation couldn't last forever.
And I guess this brings up the topic of, actually, let's talk about that other thing that we talked about a little bit before the show.
We actually have a pretty funny story here. Dave was bringing it up, but apparently there's a sort of a new, I don't know, is it new app or new framework or new website or something?
Mate, it's a new asset class. What are you talking about?
A new ecosystem in which you can buy clips of sports highlights, and then you can trade these clips of sports highlights, and this ecosystem calls them cards, like digital collectible cards.
Yeah, it's like a pack.
Yeah. So you can buy these digital highlights and then on-sell them on the secondary market and make money out of it.
And sounds pretty good.
All of these highlights are freely viewable on like YouTube or other video platforms.
So you're telling me it's the same video?
It's the same video, but these clips are unique though, which is why you can trade them and speculate on them. Apparently some video clips are getting up to $20,000, $50,000 each.
The secret to this is obviously they've created some scarcity. So it looks like there's a very limited number of these clips. I think there might only be one pack of each clip, if I remember rightly from reading. So there's built-in scarcity, which reminds you of another asset. And so it makes sense. If there's only one of this thing and I own it and more people want it, it's worth more money, right? Essentially. But like you said, it's the same video clip that you can watch on YouTube for free 30 times a day.
Yeah.
What I thought initially, okay, maybe this makes sense. If you can own these video clips, maybe you make a 1 cent royalty when people watch it.
That's not how it
works. That would make sense, right?
That would make sense.
But it's not. These are clips that you can watch elsewhere.
Yeah. No, you just own the collectible card version, digital card version of the clip.
Yeah.
So to speak.
So I thought that's a pretty interesting example.
This brings me to another kind of interesting point. If you can like infinitely create these scarce items, then how scarce are they?
And just think about what you just said. If you can infinitely create these scarce items.
I know. It's an oxymoron. I get it. Yeah. That's what I'm getting at. It's like Bitcoin is artificially scarce. There are other cryptocurrencies which are artificially scarce. There's these video clips now which are artificially scarce. But they... You can just create other cryptocurrencies, as we've seen. Like, there's thousands of them now, or you can just create other digital playing cards. If the company decides, they can just do that, or create another platform or another blockchain with different cards on it.
It seems to be like we're in this environment where you can create almost anything that's digital, put some type of, make it interesting, some type of story behind it, something that people actually want to own, and then create this embedded scarcity, and they want to own it,
yep,
regardless of what it is, pretty much.
Yeah, crazy. Anyway, that's a bit sort of tangent to what this episode's actually about, isn't it?
That's tangent number two.
Tangent number two.
So anyway, when you're talking to people that have made these pretty large speculative bets, like we were saying earlier, you find that they're often, like I said, they're extremely confident in what they're doing, but they also, let's just say, they're pretty religious about it too and fanatical about it. And we have a little thing here where these people actually go out of their way to criticize anyone who is not doing the same thing as them. Like, you're either completely on board or you're completely against it. You can't just be like, yeah, I don't care, not for me, not interested.
Which is an aspect of, like, cultism or religion. So, like you were saying, it's very religious belief.
So you'll hear us on the podcast, like, and even on our blog, saying that we don't like certain investments, and we're vocal about that. We're letting people know because we're asked about it all the time. But then we also say, look, if this makes sense to you and you're interested in it, then that's fine, go ahead.
Yeah.
But we basically treat it like we just do our own thing and we let other people do theirs. But these people are like bananas. You know?
Dave doesn't spend his spare time trawling through Twitter or going chasing like his Twitter followers or something who may be interested in some, say, alternative asset class, and then criticizing them for investing in that alternative asset class.
I'm a waste of time. I've got a lot of time, but I'm not wasting it on that. But there's even acronyms, mate, for people who are non-believers in whatever they're investing in.
Yeah.
Have you heard this acronym before?
No.
HFSP?
HFSP.
Had you ever... So we copped this online. Had you ever heard of it before?
We copped it. Nah.
Yeah, before we... Nah?
No, never.
I had to look it up.
To be fair, we're pretty old at this point, like in terms of internet culture. We're like...
Look, we were saying at the start of this podcast, just before we press record, that we're basically the grumpy old men of the Aussie fire space. That's what it's turned into. It seems like that's what it's turned into, even though we're only in our early 30s.
It's just everything that comes our way, we're just like, nah, that's probably not a good idea. Oh, Bitcoin? Nah, don't do that. Oh, can we just bet on tech? Nah. Shipping containers, ATM? Really? Why? Like, why do you want to deal with that headache?
So let's flesh out this acronym, mate, for people who haven't heard it before. Oh, maybe we're the only ones who haven't heard it. I don't know.
Maybe. HFSP means have fun staying poor. So, wow. Apparently, just a bit of context, this was said in sort of response to our criticism as Bitcoin as an investment class. So,
yeah, where we, on the episode where we explain why we don't like it and what we do prefer investing in and our reasons for doing so.
Yeah.
So that was, that. This acronym was a response basically to our views.
So apparently if you criticize Bitcoin as an investment class or you think Bitcoin is not a good investment, you should have fun staying poor forever.
You're gonna be poor if you don't own Bitcoin. That's the belief. Let's think about that for a minute. What does that actually mean? Okay, so if everyone is poor who doesn't own Bitcoin, what kind of world does that look like? Nothing has any value except for Bitcoin. No business has any value. There's no real estate has no value. Nothing has any value. So I guess Bitcoin is going to run our shops and grow our food and create new technology and run our hospitals. Is that right?
Maybe.
So Google, Amazon, worthless, mate. Woolies and Coles, zero. They're not worth anything.
The thing
Mining,
is...
banking, building, we don't need any of that anymore. No value there. Zero.
We shouldn't let this turn into just a let's bash Bitcoin episode.
But... No, it's not... Like, it's not the... It's not the currency, right, that I have a problem with. It's this kind of thinking, this kind of cultish fanatical thinking that everyone else must be insane if they don't believe what I believe.
Yeah, I mean, that's a problem, but even as a currency, Bitcoin is terrible. Like, it doesn't have any of the good, like, factors that make a good currency, like price stability and being actually able to be used in return for goods and services. Like, it doesn't actually have that at the moment. It's just the belief that's driving it at the moment. And I've actually never met anyone who would actually use Bitcoin for their everyday transactions when given the option. Like, most people who own Bitcoin are owning it to hoard it, to invest in it. They wouldn't actually go out and use like a Bitcoin ATM card to pay for their groceries, because their whole premise is that, oh, Bitcoin's going to make me money and I just want to hoard it.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to the financial noise, mate. We're creating some noise of our own.
We're creating plenty of financial noise, aren't we?
So anyway, when you, like, back to the stories of people who have made a lot of money and their high conviction bets. A friend has actually told me that he really envies the conviction that these people have. And on the surface, you can see why. Like, they have this supreme level of comfort and confidence in what they're doing. But, like, I said to him, the people who have the highest conviction about what they're doing are the people who think that there's only one possible outcome in the future. And that's basically never the case, and that's a dangerous way to operate and think about the world.
Yeah, it's very different to, like, spreading your bets, diversifying, not having all your eggs in one basket. Definitely very different to that. All right, so after those few long rants, why don't we actually discuss why none of this more noise actually matters, and why we should actually rename news into noise, because that's typically what
news
is.
Should be, the nightly noise.
I can't see a good reason to watch the noise every evening on the TV. It's just...
What about the financial noise?
Most of it doesn't matter. Companies, you know, they have huge rises, huge falls all the time. Sometimes particular companies are doing really well. Sometimes they're, like, dying and they're about to go into receivership. Numerous companies go bankrupt every single year. Others, they're just being formed. They're having IPOs and they're really starting to fly. For an index fund investor, none of this actually matters. Like, absolutely none of it.
But it sounds like, when you first think about it, you think, well, if I own this bunch of companies and a couple of them literally go out of business, surely that matters. Why shouldn't I care about that?
Because when you own an index fund that's made up of 300 or 1600 or 3000 companies, any single company, like, makes up, like, at most, the very biggest companies would make up like 1 or 2%, or in the Australian index, I think it's a bit more than that, maybe 3% or 4%.
Yeah, I think it's 6 even, maybe a bit.
Oh, really?
Much higher, obviously.
It's much higher in Australia, yeah. Fair enough. So any one of these companies, like, going completely bankrupt is irrelevant to, like, your return. Like, even if a 6% company went to $0, which is an extremely unlikely scenario, you would lose 6% of that index fund's, like, your value in that. And keep in mind, the beauty of index funds is that as soon as one company goes bankrupt, all that business flows to the other companies. And then those companies increase in value because there's still the demand for what that company was doing, or there's still the money in the market out there spending on businesses, or spending on services, spending on products rather, so that any one company going out of business has no effect on the index fund, because the index fund tracks the entire market, the entire economy. So that money doesn't just disappear.
Yeah. And what tends to happen is, rather than, like companies don't go bankrupt overnight, they'll suffer usually like a series of problems, and then they might fall into trouble with their debt repayments and try and restructure the business and all the rest of it. But that happens generally pretty slowly. And so if a company is going down and going downhill this way, you'll find that its market value will generally just fall away over time, over a period of months and maybe even a couple of years. And so you, like you said before, you're not even going to notice that happening, because it will become a smaller part of the index and the other companies will be doing okay and they'll overtake it. So as that company declines in value, it becomes less and less relevant until eventually it falls to the point where it's no longer a high enough value to keep in the index. It'll fall out of the index, maybe even before it goes bankrupt.
Yeah, or another company will buy it out and take over all that business and run it more efficiently. Like, this is this part of the self-cleansing nature of the index, and it's part of the modern economy. Like, the winning companies take over the business, and the ones that aren't doing so well fall away. Because of that, it won't affect your investments in the long term. And it's, again, it's just more noise that you don't need to worry about.
And we've talked about this before, but whole industries grow and fade away over time. I think it was our episode on index funds where we covered the history of the US market, and around 100 years ago, approximately 50% or so of the entire market value was in railroads. Yep. And obviously that is not the case anymore. Technology was very, very little. I can't remember. It was a very small percentage, but now it's the biggest sector in that market. So these things going to happen over time, industries dying and industries growing.
Yeah.
And you don't even really need to concern yourself with it. Because despite that happening, railroads have sunk in value in proportion to the market, but the US market has still delivered excellent returns over that long period of time.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you have to invest for 100 years to get a good return. It's just the case that despite industries going up and down and companies going up and down, disappearing and whatever, the market, because it is so diversified and because it changes over time, you're still going to get attractive returns.
Precisely. And so what we're trying to get to here is that regardless of what's happening around you, regardless of the companies that are booming or dying, or regardless of what industries are booming or dying, or any speculative bets or Bitcoin or anything else that might be happening on the news and whatnot, it shouldn't actually affect your financial goals. What really affects your financial goals is what you can take control of, what you do personally, which is how much you save, how much income you can make, what your habits are, and how you approach the inputs, is what we like to say, instead of the outputs. Like, we are clearly of the opinion that, like, broad-based index investing is the most reliable and secure way to invest your money long-term. That's what Dave and I both do. And we shouldn't focus on how to, like,
juice our returns
so much.
Because, as we've both discussed, I think on this podcast and also in our blogs, saving is what drives the majority of your results anyway over a 10 or 15 or even 20 year period. Yep. So the idea of juicing your returns and thinking that you need to get a certain high return to achieve financial independence, you really don't. You don't need to get high returns to become financially independent at all.
No, not at all.
So what are the things, so if you mentioned focusing on what we can control. So what actually can we control? So you mentioned earning and saving. So investing consistently, like on a monthly basis, regardless of what's happening in the news, is basically the best thing that most people can do.
Yep.
Because if you pause and stop investing for 1 month or 2 months because you think you're a bit nervous and scared of the news and what's happening around you, when do you start investing again? The longer you leave it, the harder it's going to be, because you'll feel like it has to be the right time because you've waited. So you'll want to wait longer and longer to justify your decision for waiting. So it gets harder and harder. Yeah.
And if whatever you were waiting for didn't actually happen, you'll keep thinking that it's even more and more likely the longer you wait. But that's not the case. We can't predict the future. We can't predict what the markets are going to do. Investing consistently is important because it's something you can control. Reinvesting your dividends. And like we said before, optimizing our spending to create more savings, trying to increase your income. That's the key areas where we can really make gains in this sort of thing.
And in terms of dealing with the news and dealing with the ups and downs mentally, one of the best things you can do is to pay less attention to the news or the noise, and also check your portfolio less. If you're checking it daily, just try and check it every 2 days. Like, even a small gap, if you can just increase the amount of time between when you're checking your accounts, that'll make a difference to your mental state when you're dealing with the markets. Because as you're investing every month, your portfolio should be increasing every month because you've added more money into that portfolio. And also that because the market goes up over time, the longer you wait between the last time you checked it and the next time you check it, the more chance it is that the market is going to be higher than the last time. which gives you like a sense of positive reinforcement rather than checking it every day. There's almost 50-50 chance that it's going to be up one day, down the next day. So the longer you can wait, the better it is, and the more positive experience you'll have with your investing and with looking at your portfolio.
Yeah, you can get into bad habits like checking your portfolio that often and trying to like, and it's, again, it's pointless. It's just noise. What are you trying to achieve?
It does. Yeah, your money doesn't work harder because you're watching it.
No, it doesn't. So the longer you can wait, definitely the better. And eventually that becomes much, much easier to just not look at it. You become comfortable with your investment choices and the fact that it's volatile and that it really doesn't matter.
I think there's almost like an illusion of control. If we're watching it, we know what's happening. We feel like it's probably a way for us to feel like we're doing something and we're in control because we're monitoring it. But you're not in control. No, really, you're not. You can't influence what's happening and you have to focus on the long
term. You're in control of your asset allocation and your savings rate and your income to some extent. So focus on those
big things.
Yeah, exactly. So one final point. Some people think that the market is rigged in favor of the rich. Dave, do you agree with this? Do you think that the rich are really running the market and that us little folk, we don't really have a chance to do well?
You could argue that they're running the market in one sense because they own most of the assets. You know, rich people own most of the financial assets. I think that's been pretty well documented. So you could argue it from that perspective. But the second part you said where the average person can't do well, that's absolutely rubbish. The average person can definitely do well. But because think about this. Brokerage costs are the lowest they've ever been in history. Management fees on things like index funds or whatever you want to invest in is basically the lowest in history as well. And the options that we have available to us is effectively limitless. So it's really the best time that we've ever had to be a regular investor.
Yeah, that's right. And when you think in history, like before these really low-cost index funds were a thing, there were very few options for the average investor other than kind of high-cost mutual funds where you had to give your money to one of these sort of these rich people, so to speak, so they could earn an investment return from you and you had to pay them a pretty high fee. But in the year 2021, we've never had it better with access to the market and low costs. And yeah, investing internationally is a really big one that's only come through very recently, I think, to do that cheaply and easily. So that's just nonsense.
And it should also be said that in the long run, most people who are like actively trading will usually underperform the market average. So you'll often find that due to taxes, due to trading costs, due to poor decisions and the returns that different stocks deliver, which are more or less unknowable in advance, that the more you trade, the worse off you'll be in the long run. And the less you do and the more you keep it simple, the better your long-term results will be.
Investment is just about the long-term ownership of assets that will benefit you from compound growth and income. Trading, like you said, has so many drags. It has tax drag, it has fee drag, it has just a mental drag as well and a time drag on yourself. It's really not worth it. And there's such a huge hurdle to overcome to actually be successful that it is impossible. Close enough to be said that it's impossible.
And if you think about what we're really doing, we want to be increasing. We're trying to piggyback essentially on the returns that businesses deliver over time. So we want to be, what did I say?
We want to be in piggybacking.
We're piggybacking. Oh, okay. So we're owning slices of businesses, right? So we want to be increasing our ownership of those businesses over time. And we do that by buying more and more shares as we can afford to. And if you think about what I said earlier, where rich people own most of their financial assets, they own most of their financial assets. They're not trading them every day. Plenty of rich people do as well because there's hedge funds available for those people. But you want to be a long-term owner and a large owner of these assets.
That's right. And this might all sound pretty boring, just buy and hold long-term.
We're the boring old men.
Grumpy old men.
Grumpy. Can we be grumpy and boring?
I think we can. I don't think those are mutually exclusive items right there. But that's in our humble opinion, quite a positive. We don't want the share market to be all that exciting. You can get your excitement by going to the amusement park or doing some sports or anything else. You want your share market investments to be boring and to just fade into the background.
If you think about it, the less time we've already established basically that you can receive and earn good returns over the long term by doing not much at all. So you can also think of it in terms of what's your return on the amount of hours and time and effort and thought that you've invested into your strategy, like on a weekly basis, and whether that's worth it, because you might be spending hours and hours of extra time and thinking and effort and energy to earn not much more returns, if you can even earn those returns at all, which the chances are you can't.
It's heavily stacked against that.
So it's good. I like to think of it like return on hours invested.
If it just becomes another job for you, then okay, you found a new job that you like. That's not really financially independent.
You could say I'm earning X per hour for putting in this many extra hours per week studying this stuff, but the chances are that's not going to work out.
No.
It sounds pretty cool, like a hobby and whatever, but chances aren't good.
Nah.
Not to say it can't work, but...
I'm pretty comfortable in saying that it won't work.
But you can't say it won't work 100%
no,
of the time.
No. But I can say that over the long term...
The odds aren't good.
It will most likely won't work. Like, maybe people will have little wins here and there, and that's fine, obviously. But try and keep that up for 15 or 20 years, and the amount of people that are successful over that time in beating the market just fade into complete insignificance. So I think that's a...
Those are the main top meaty topics for inside the show today. You want to cover a few takeaways?
Yeah, definitely. So I suppose the takeaways are... There's a lot of financial noise. You're going to have a lot of people talking to you about different assets, we'll call them, that they've invested in and how they've made a motza. This doesn't affect your personal life. Don't worry about it. If you know what you're doing, keep doing what you're doing. Drown out the noise. Don't always be checking your portfolio of investments like 3 times a day. It's not going to change. It's not going to change that much anyway. And it's just, again, meaningless noise. And it doesn't affect your financial goals. So focus on what you can control. Savings, earnings, asset allocation, stick it in, stay long term, and Bob's your uncle. You should hit financial independence before you know it.
Sounds good,
right? And I think that's a wrap. Cool. So hope we gave you guys a few things to think about today. And I hope this reminder helps you stay focused on your goals to tune out the noise. If you enjoyed the show, we'd love it if you can share it with someone else who would benefit from listening to the show. You can reach out to us with questions and feedback at fireandchillpod@gmail.com. You can also find us at our blogs, strongmoneyaustralia.com and lifelongshuffle.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.